you know, we have probabilities of what's going to happen, and this is going to be the exciting place to be.
The RIAA is the Recording Industry Artists of America, which is shutting down increasingly on the use of music over the Internet, right, Professor?
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Thank you.
While everyone else is using the Internet to manipulate images, sounds, you know, audio and video and data, the recording industry is basically trying to clamp down and stop that from happening, which completely goes against the direction of the technology that's being developed. And it's the technology which is driving the way the world is going, and that's where Professor Lessig wants to see the law go, is let the law be shaped by the technology, not force the law based on the way the corporate values are created.
Yeah, that's right. But my focus recently, I think this is a very useful way to think about it, is generational. So Pew did a study of practices on the Internet. They found 74% of teenagers had created and shared content on the Internet. Right? I'm not talking about people doing peer-to-peer file sharing. That number is about 99%. But I'm talking about teenagers actually creating stuff and making it available to others using the Internet. Now, the idea that 74% do that is astonishingly high, in my view. And it, you know, signals the kind of taste of the next generation, which is to be empowered to create. And so that, you know, if that's what they want, then the question is, are you going to either, you know, enable them to do that legally? And if you do that, then you become part of what they're creating, or, you know, shut them out. And if you shut them out, then they'll either do it illegally, and you won't get any return from that, or they won't pay attention to you, and you won't get any return from that either.
David,
did you want to jump in with your question? Sure.
Yeah. Well, so can you repeat that percentage, 74%?
74%, yes.
So we always talk in Pacifica about, you know, wanting to reach a broader audience of youth. And the point is, if we're providing something of real value in their creative efforts, there's going to be a real appreciation for that service. With respect to Sarah's question about, you know, how people find content that's worthwhile, I think that we'll have a concept of virtual program directors. Different people will be free to aggregate our content in different way for different audiences. So all the fight that goes on in the station about the decisions of an individual program director will be relieved on the Internet, because we might allow anybody to be a program director to aggregate content in blocks. And I really think that's one way it'll work. People are attracted to specific personalities. So in the way that a DJ just organizes other licensed music, we may have people aggregating our content in different ways and with other people. So we'll need to think about, you know, various technologies to support that and the rest of it. But I think that the real important thing is the way it can cause our audience to grow rapidly and have them appreciate us for providing a service. The last point I want to make is that Democracy Now!, which is our strongest fundraising program, gives its entire archive away constantly. You can go and listen on the web, you can watch the video, and you can go back as far as you want. They've even got people transcribing it. They're out there making their content useful to people. Where they're getting support is because people understand the value of that. And when you're dealing with people who are out there trying to create and running into walls with all this other cultural product everywhere else, and they come to Pacifica and they find content that we've made available for them to exercise their creativity, I really think it's going to be liberatory. I think it's going to relieve a lot of the fights of the station. And the last thing I'll say is, if we can generate 1,000 hours of production in each signal area, we'll have the basis for creaming off the best, you know, 20 or 30 hours of it for broadcast. So the more, we shouldn't be threatened by this activity, we should be promoting it, and then gradually you can find the most brilliant stuff and put it on our air, which we already do.
Do we have time for one more question?
Sure, Lisa. Is that Lisa or Lisa?
Lisa.
Lisa Davis from WBAI.
With the S sound. Right. I just want, because first of all, like I said, I think this is a great idea. But one of the things I was thinking about, I guess that's going to, from the legal aspect, maybe bring up more of the issue in terms of consent and release forms. I mean, it's one thing if you have the producer, but let's say somebody's interviewing somebody. And with this, you can never tell when suddenly somebody's words are going to be in demand. you know, 10 years from now, everybody might want what was said. And so I would think that the issue of release forms then becomes even, I would think, maybe even more important, you know. It's one thing if the producer says yes, but if the other person being interviewed or whatever says, well, wait a minute, I didn't know it was going to be like this. So I don't know if you had any comments about that aspect of it.
I think it's a very good point. And I think, you know, if you choose to do this, we should do some very careful lawyering around exactly how to set it up so you can do it easily and most respecting the interests involved best. And this would be one very important part of that. I agree.
Lawrence, this is Rob. I just wanted to ask a follow-up question to Greg's question, which I thought was a good one. And Greg basically went to the issue of, don't we create a different licensing paradigm where we have not employees that are producing content that's owned by the network, but where we have volunteers producing content, and they may want to claim ownership as well. And yes, it is a problem. It is an issue that it requires lawyering. But it seems to me that part of the way to look at this issue from the local station level is that we may have producers and programmers that are producing programming, whether it's part of the regular schedule or not, and they may be taking the initiative to distribute this programming if they get a convenient licensing mechanism and basically taking Pacifica content and finding audiences for it, some of which may be free, but some of which may also be paying. And that may open up markets all over the country for us.
Yeah, I think that's right. And the way Creative Commons licenses work, we have, we basically say pick three options, answer three questions. Do you want to allow commercial use? Do you want to allow modifications? And if you allow modifications, do you want to require the people who release modified works release their works under the same license? That's called a share-alike provision. And basically, if you use a share-alike provision here, I would say if somebody takes your content and mixes it into their content, then they've got to release their content also under a share-alike provision. So that would guarantee that in some sense they couldn't claim it back in a way that would take value from the community. And then if you overlaid on top of that this sort of commercial rights dimension, which is, you know, if you use it in a commercial way, then here's the licensing structure for people who have contributed to this, then you could preserve both the value of commercial but also the value of community that the share-alike restriction builds.
Did everybody get that, what Dr. Lessig just said? Because maybe you should repeat that, because that's a little bit of a tricky concept. Because I have a little trouble with it, too. Could you repeat that?
The share-alike concept?
Yeah,
so
the whole piece.
So basically, when we give somebody a license under Creative Commons, they've got to answer three questions. And one of them is, do I want to allow commercial use? Second, you want to allow modification? And third, if you allow modification, do you want to require that people who modify your work release their work under a similar license? And that third condition we say share alike, meaning you've got it, you've been allowed to share it, then you have to make your stuff available to be shared by others. And that's an automatic way to make sure that when somebody takes your content and mixes it into theirs, they're going to have to make their content available in a similar way to others. Now, the tricky thing that we've not yet done, but, you know, when I talked to David, I said we'd be interested in experimenting in this context to see how to do it, is to overlay on top of that the commercial rights. So you basically say, for this non-commercial community that's engaging in this production of citizen media, they get to do it all so long as they agree to make theirs available for others, too. But if you want to do it in a commercial way, then here are the terms that govern how it gets used commercially. So you try to facilitate these two separate markets and also facilitate the community building that you want to encourage through citizen media.
Thank you.
It's Bonnie. Do we have time for any more?
Yeah, but I think this is going to be about the last one, Bonnie. Thank you.
I was really interested in Greg's comment and question in that I am a volunteer programmer on one of these radio stations, and especially in that I'm a music programmer, and it does seem to me, I'm not sure who made the comment about having people play live on the air and then being able to release this to people to use it as they choose. it seems to me that we would be dealing with an enormous amount of paperwork and having to keep track here if, in fact, we're dividing this up into different use rights and whether people are using it in a commercial sense or they're using it in a nonprofit sense. And my experience with it, because I work with music, is that once we decide to let something go on the Internet, we just kiss it goodbye, because you're not going to be able to keep track of how people are going to use it. And as far as people modifying things, you know, you can do everything you want to say you're going to do to control that. But there is no control. We're in a digital world right now. And I am especially sensitive to the idea that we are thinking that we can do this with music, because no matter what air it's been broadcast on, we don't own the copyrights to that. You know, we have to give some respect to the artist's rights in this. Am I completely being the wet damper here?
No, I think absolutely this is the BBC issue, too. You've got to respect the artist's rights. And I think the description of the idea was, you know, that you find artists who want to exercise their rights in exactly this way. And there are artists that do. Especially, I think the idea was around local artists who you're trying to give some sort of platform to. And I also agree with the point that in some sense you're not going to control at least some of the uses of this once it's out there. And that's part of the reality that pushes people to think about other ways to make it legitimate for people to get access to it. But I do think that if you have a license that basically runs with a copyrighted material, there's no contract that you're signing. It's basically because of the way copyright functions, if you release it under a public license, the license governs the terms of it no matter who uses it, and without any sort of formal agreement with the original copyright owner. If you release it like that, then entities that are engaging in commercial transactions, you know, will be guided quite strongly by their lawyers to make sure that they've cleared the necessary rights. And because if they don't, there's a huge amount of copyright penalty out there that they're going to face. So the point is, and so if you set that up in that way, then you're not going to control the non-commercial uses. That's part of our point. But you will set up a structure that allows people to opt into legitimate commercial uses in a way that, I agree, has to respect the artist's rights.
Hey, can I give a concrete example also? At KPFK, during our Katrina fundraising, artists came into studio and they signed contracts with us that said we could offer it as part of Fund Drive premiums. It basically became ours to do anything they want. Jackson Browne, Ben Harper came into our studios and did live stuff. And the point is, if we're supporting not a privatized world of commodities, but a liberatory commonwealth of civic media that becomes richer with time, I think there are a whole lot of artists who want to be a part of that and want to be identified as being a part of that, who will contribute to that archive. And that's sort of the point of not saying blanketly we're doing everything with it, but just saying, you know, we have the option of doing this. And indeed, as our platforms become more attractive and as our commonwealth of media becomes more attractive, more and more people come to it and people become more and more known. And that's really one of the things that's been found in the open source software movement, which is you get this exponential growth over time that's small at the outset, but it grows bigger and bigger to the point that civic production can compete with corporate production and distribution, because it becomes the aggregation of content that's available to the Commonwealth becomes so rich over time. And I think there are lots of people who would be willing to be a part of that, would be excited about it, being part of a new form of media rather than the capture form.
And that's really the area where Professor Lessig is encouraging, you know, people to think, is that we should not be grounded by the law. We should be grounded by what the technology enables us to do and how that supports commonwealth approaches to shared property. Okay. We've taken about an hour of time right now, so unless there's Professor Lessig, if you'd like to leave us with any thoughts, we can release you.
Well, I just leave you with the offer that if there's any way I can help in this, I'm really eager to do that. And obviously this is can only be the beginning of a conversation, but if there are more ways to make it detailed or make fill this out in a way that helps it, helps you think about it, just let me know, and I'm happy to do that.
Thank
That's
you
a
so
great
much.
Offer.
You.
Okay,
thanks
very much.
Thank you for your time.
Okay, bye.
Thank you
and,
so much.
I'm going to check off, too, and I just really want to thank the committee both for entertaining Dr. Lessig's presentation and for letting me butt in so much. It means a lot, and thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, David.
Thank you. We thought we'd wear you out anyway.
Thank you. I'm going to sign off as well now, but I appreciate it. It was very helpful.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Okay, see you.
So long, Greg.
Okay, we're back to the business. The first thing we have to do is adopt the agenda. So let me just describe what the agenda will be at this point. The first thing we have to act on is we have to have a chair pro tem to conduct the balance of the meeting. And I'd like to ask if someone would consider it to nominate me so that I can continue as chair pro tem.
So
I think yes,
I'm nominated.
I nominate you.
Okay, was that Lisa?
Yes, that was Lisa.
Lisa Davis.
Lisa Davis, yeah.
Yes, I know.
Okay. All right.
Bob Robinson.
Okay, thank you. And if anyone else would like to nominate someone else or if someone would like to nominate themselves, this is the appropriate time to do that.
I think you're going to run uncontested, Rob. I'd like to nominate Rob Green.
Rob, we're pitting you against yourself.
No, it just means he's going to have to continue after we all leave the phone.
I was being schizoid.
So are we saying that passed without objection?
Yeah, I heard no objections, so that's passed by acclamation. The first item of business is for us to conduct the nominations for chair and secretary on an ongoing basis for the programming committee. And the way that we're going to do that is that we will ask people to make nominations for both offices. We'll deal with the secretary's office first, then we'll go to the chair. After we have nominees, we will let each person make a statement for a period of time. Then, because of the bylaws, we will not vote on this call, but what we will do is we will instruct people on how to vote, single transferable voting method, and you will receive by tomorrow from Teresa Allen, a ballot that will provide you with the names of the nominees. You will then have to vote in ascending order based on the number of nominees. So if there were three nominees, you will be asked to vote for the three people, one, two, and three. One will be your first choice, two will be your second choice, three will be your third choice. You do not have to vote for every single one, but you have to make some vote in order to have it recorded in a 1, 2, or 3. And you will receive the ballot. You will have a certain period of time to mail it. You will have to mail it to an address, and the votes will be counted at a date certain, and they will be announced to the PNB and to the members of this committee. So that's how we conduct the election. After
May I say something?
Yes, Teresa, please.
I do remind everyone, I did ask for everyone's name, address, email, and phone, but I did not receive everybody's address. And some people I didn't receive their phone and email. But so I do suggest on your outside envelope, put your name and address. So your ballots will be private. You can either put your ballot in an envelope and put that inside another envelope. But what we will do is I will check the envelopes that we have no more than one ballot from each person. And then after I've confirmed that, I'll take the votes out, mix them up, and then turn them over, open them up, and tally them with witnesses. But it is essential that you put your name and address outside of the envelope so we make sure that everyone has cast only one vote.
Teresa, where are we sending them to?
We'll get into that.
I don't think it would hurt for me to give my address on the envelope.
No, that's
understood.
Fine. You can give it out now, but you'll get it in the email. And I'll call everyone to make sure that you get the email tomorrow, okay?
Well, let me remind everyone of another thing. If for some reason you don't get the email, you could reconstruct it by hand. Let's say you got busy and you're not at your computer. You could, list the names. I call you. I'd be happy. You can call me. I'd be happy to give you the names. And you could write it up. It doesn't have to be a zero. It doesn't have to be a printed out copy of the ballot that I email.
But just for safety's sake, Teresa, why don't you right now give your mailing address where you'll be mailing these ballots, and your email address and your telephone number, so that people can write it down now, and then if something happens and there's a crisis, they can refer to their notes of this meeting.
She might not want her address out.
I have a question.
That's true.
Is this meeting something that can be accessed by the public?
Yeah.
Pardon me?
Can this meeting be accessed by the public?
Yeah, we're streaming now. Maybe I better not give
streamed.
It.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, you're
I
right.
Not give it out.
I don't think it's safe for Teresa to give all of her posts.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. I forgot that we were streaming. I forgot. You're right.
I will send the ballot to everyone, and Rob should have my address. So if for any reason you don't get it, you could talk to Rob. Does that sound okay?
Okay.
I'll tell you what, Rob. After this call, call me, and I will give you my address. If for some reason people don't get it, they could call you, and you could give it to them.
Okay. We'll work through that. Okay. So I'd like to open the floor now. The second part of the meeting, after this is complete, this is the agenda. Now we're going to ask everyone to approve the agenda. The second part is I'm just going to update the people on the meeting with where we are in the process of the program policy, which was approved by the programming committee last October and sent to the PNB that provisionally approved it and sent it forward for comment. So that will be the second item of the agenda. So the first item is the election of officers for this committee. The second item will be an update on the passage of the program policy. I'd like to ask for someone to move the acceptance of the agenda for this evening.
I move that we accept the agenda.
So moved. Is there a second?
A second.
Okay. Are there any objections to the agenda as it stands? Okay. Hearing none, then the agenda is as we discussed. So we're going to move to the election of permanent officers for the Pacifica National Boards Programming Committee, and I'd like to begin by opening the floor for nominations for the Office of Secretary. The fundamental responsibilities of the Secretary are to maintain a written record of these proceedings and to distribute it to the members of the committee, and to work with me and other staff to make sure that all documents are archived on the Internet so that they're accessible to not just our LSBs and our PNB, but to others that are working with us on our business.
Do the current officers still serve?
Pardon me?
Do the current officers still serve, or from last year?
No, we're having an election to elect officers again.
No, I mean, do the ones that served for last year, are they still on this committee at this point?
I am, and Serene Roberts, who was the secretary, who is not on the call this evening. She's on another committee call. She is on the committee again. Yes.
Thank you.
But we want to go through the process of renominating people, regardless of whether the previous officers are here or not. So
I'd like to nominate Serene.
Okay, we hear a nomination for Serene Roberts. Is there a second for that?
Sure, I'll second that.
I don't think you need seconds on nominations.
Who was that?
Steve, you're correct. I'm sorry. That was Bonnie.
That was sorry.
Serene Roberts. I would just like to say it's kind of difficult to nominate people that are in absentia. I'm not really sure whether it's a compliment or,
unless they previously left word, they can't be nominated in absentia.
This is Teresa Allen. I nominate Steve Brown.
Well, Steve Brown declines, unfortunately. But I would nominate Teresa for this thankless task because she does it so well.
She's secretary of the PNB.
That's not a disqualification, is it?
No.
It's only an endorsement of her qualification for this job.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if she accepted it, it might be grounds for committal. But
Steve, are you sure, because you're computer literate and you're interested in this subject?
I'm sure. The problem is I'm in the middle of an ongoing medical emergency with one of my sons.
Uh-huh.
And I can't really undertake that. This is going to be going on for months, and it will continue for months longer.
Mm-hmm.
So I really couldn't undertake that obligation at this point.
Okay.
If anyone else would consider the job, we would work with you to try to make it as simple as possible. But it's a very important role. We really need somebody to keep a basic record, and we can work with you so that it's not a job that takes zillions of hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other nominations?
Would Alan Minsky consider this?
Nope. No, would run interference with the work I do too much.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have to ask Wayne. We should do it. Be very kind if both of you continue on.
Well, I did take the minutes at some of the meetings last year. It was a pleasure to do it. I would think it would be advantageous for somebody that's actually on the call to offer to do this, because I would hate to elect someone that is unwilling to do it. We really don't know whether Serene is willing to do it.
Yeah,
if Serene doesn't want to do it, we can always have another election.
It's very easy to do. If you have other
Well, we'll have to do that if we don't have any nominees that are present at the meeting, because we can't have somebody that's not here to accept the position. I don't think that's fair.
Lisa, would you be willing to serve?
Teresa, you know better.
No, I know.
No,
I'm
too flaky to be a secretary. I'm a great chair, but I'm a terrible secretary.
Actually, Rob, you know, you can nominate people in absentia.
You can.
We do that on our LSB. We do it quite a few.
Yeah, I just, Arv, I mean, we had some experience last year, and I don't think it's fair. I'd like to avoid.
Can anyone contact her? Is she right now?
Sure.
Pardon me?
Can somebody call her?
Someone contact her and see if she'd be willing to serve?
She's on another call.
Frankly, I was not given a phone number for her.
I don't have her phone number.
I don't think she has one.
Yeah, she has a phone number, but
yeah.
She called me today to say that she had to be on another call, so she's not going to be available by telephone. So nobody else that's on the call right now would consider a nomination for the position of secretary. Okay. That means we're not going to be voting on that position.
Can I make
I tell you what, I'll be happy to do it until the next meeting.
Can I make a suggestion? I mean, can't we at least find out if Serena would want to do it again? And, I mean, if she doesn't, then, you know, we definitely go with some. But at least if she does, then people can decide to vote or however they do that.
Yeah.
I tell you what, this is Teresa. I'll be willing to do it, and if I'll continue to try to find someone else. And if you can elect me, and then if Serene wants to do it, or someone else steps forward that's maybe not on this call, then I'll be glad to step down. How's that sound?
Sounds good to me.
So we're going to be. Go
someone
ahead.
Someone wants to nominate me.
Lisa,
I guess
what
Lisa
did you
nominate me?
I did nominate you.
Lisa, what did you say?
No, I would just like to get a little bit more clarity because I think, Sarv, you nominated Serene.
Yeah.
And I understood it to be said that you can nominate somebody
can.
In absentia. So I'm saying even if Teresa gets nominated, I mean, it could still go. Like if Serene decides, okay, I want to do this,
yeah.
Then Serene and Teresa would be the ones people would be voting
yeah.
for. Okay, just
yeah.
wanted to understand.
So maybe
so
I'll,
you wanna,
on
are
the
we
ballot
saying
show. On the ballot, your name with Teresa and Serene.
Okay, that's
but if Teresa doesn't want to, if Serene wants to do it, I think Teresa would withdraw.
Well, I don't, well then.
Well, we can technically we can put Serene's name there. I just have reservations about nominating people that aren't at a meeting. Again, well, I don't know whether it's a form of.
I move we postpone consideration of the secretary question until someone can contact Serene.
How about, can we hold it next week then, or whenever the next meeting? Or this time maybe Teresa can take notes, if it's possible.
Well, we can elect Teresa chairman or secretary pro tem.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's fine.
For the time being.
Yeah.
So can we get someone to nominate Teresa secretary
secretary pro tem.
Okay. Are there any objections to Teresa continuing time being as secretary for the programming committee?
Not in the least.
Okay. Hearing no objection, we'll do that with the proviso that we will continue to look for a candidate other than Teresa who might conceivably fulfill this position in future.
Well,
okay?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
All right. So with Teresa is secretary pro tem by acclamation, I will now entertain nominations for the position of chair for the programming committee.
I nominated Rob.
I second. Well, we don't have to second, right? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, are there other nominations? Would someone like to nominate someone else? Okay. At this point, there are no other candidates, so I will close the nominations, and you will receive from Teresa tomorrow instructions on how to mail your ballots. For each candidate, you will put a 1, 2, or 3, since there's only one candidate for chair. You will put a 1 by the name, which does not prevent people from doing write-ins. But that's the way we will have to complete the ballots. And we will have a future election for the secretary when we have other candidates. I will call everybody. I have everyone's phone number, with the exception, I think, I'm not sure that I have a phone for Attila Nagy. But I will call everyone to make sure that they've gotten Teresa's email instructions. And I will, if you're not there, I will leave a message, you know, with a number.
To say,
so
excuse
can,
me, Rob,
yes?
To save you the phone calls, this is tedious. Why don't you ask for a return receipt? Teresa can ask for a return receipt on her email. Make sure the people have opened it. And then you will know if they've gotten them. And you only need call the ones who haven't sent the return receipt.
We can try that then. Then if you get Teresa's email, please respond and say thank you very much or I got it. And
she
we'll
can,
know that
she
you've
can,
got it.
She can set it up so that a return receipt is asked for, and then you just have to click it, and it will automatically indicate you've opened it.
Why isn't
okay.
this by acclamation?
Because you can send in write-ins.
The bylaws require that we do it this way, unfortunately. I mean, that's just the way we have to do it to be compliant with the bylaws is the answer.
A point of personal privilege, Rob and everybody. I'm here at KPFK, and I'm going to step off of this call because we're actually evacuating the building. I think everything's fine, but we seem to have some kind of smoke that's filling the building.
Well, you better get out of
okay.
there.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll try to call in again soon, okay? Thanks.
Right. Thank you, Alan. Okay, so, Teresa, if you need to know how to do the reply return reply request, you can call Steve. You have his number.
Steve can call me after this call.
Okay.
I'm not in my home now. I'm at the station, as a matter of fact, hunched over a little table.
Okay.
But I'll call you later.
Okay.
I do want to get one other thing clear.
Teresa.
The ballots need to be received by me by a certain date.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, in order to formally do this, I would like to ask everybody, rather than saying it has to be postmarked by, for example, Monday the 26th or Tuesday the 27th, I'm going to ask that Teresa will count the ballots that she has received by Friday the 30th of March. Okay? That will give everybody 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 days to make your choice and put it in the mail, okay?
What's that date again?
Friday the 30th.
She'll start counting them by that time?
Pardon me?
I'm sorry, could you repeat what you said about, I thought you said instead of requesting that they be postmarked by a time.
No.
Right.
Rather than the postmark, because whenever we do that, somebody can't get it in by the postmark date, but they want to get it counted. So I'm just saying, in order to count your ballots and to basically certify your votes for this election,
mm-hmm.
make sure that we get it by the 30th. Okay, you've got 9 days to put it in the mail, to get the information from Teresa, complete the requirements, put it in the mail, and she will have it by Friday the 30th. And we don't have exactly a crowded field of candidates, so.
I do suggest that you do it right away so you don't forget it. And I'm going to, right now I'm not connected to the internet, although I am on my computer. As soon as I connect to the internet, I'm going to send it out to the committee.
Okay. Are there any questions about this? Because we don't want to make it more difficult for you, but the STV voting can be confusing. Any questions? Okay. We'll be in touch with you. Okay. I'd like to move on to the final order on the agenda, order of business on the agenda, and that's the issue of programming policy. This policy was adopted by this committee last October. It went to the PNB. The National Board adopted it at its meeting in October in Houston with a proviso, and that proviso was that the document be circulated to the general managers and the LSBs. That was done, and a report was then made to the PNB in January. We had about, I think at that time, we had about 12 comments from people at the LSB or listeners, and we decided to extend the comment period yet again. So we extended the comment period between the last meeting at the end of January and this date. Our next meeting is going to take place this coming Friday, and since that time, I have received only a few comments as a result of a meeting that KPFK in LA held last week. I'm beginning to get some more comments. So the principal business of this committee vis-a-vis the programming policy will be as follows. One is I would like to bring forward all of the comments that we've received since the PNB provisionally adopted the policy in October so that this body can make determinations on what changes we will make in the language based on the input that we've had from the listeners. Well, from everyone that we sent the policy to. Okay, so that's one area of involvement that this committee will have. The second thing is that this committee will be involved in working with the PNB and management in the issues of implementing the programming policy. Okay? Now, I realize that everyone may not have read it, but I have sent the policy again to everybody here. I would just like to remind you that because of some of the requests we had about the policy, there are three parts to the policy. The actual policy that was adopted by the PNB is the final programming policy document. And that policy document is on pages, I believe that they're pages 5 through 9 of the document. Behind that, there's a section called implementation, and that basically attempted to respond to two criticisms that we had from folks. One criticism that we had was from people that said, well, I've read the programming policy, but I don't think that the PNB is going to be able to oversee it or to implement it. So we tried to put together some basic implementation steps that would make that clear. The other critique that we had from people was, well, all the PNB is trying to do is to assume responsibility for producing programming and take it away from the local stations. So we tried to make it very clear that that was not what we intended to do. So that's what the implementation part is all about. So the two things, again, that this body will be doing will be reviewing all of the comments that we've had from listeners and others to make some final suggestions on the language. And the second aspect will be to deal with the implementation once the PNB makes a decision at this next meeting about how implementation of the programming policy is to take place. Is that kind of clear, or am I making it more complicated than it is?
It's both.
It's what?
It's both.
Both.
Rob, can I speak just a couple of seconds?
Yes, please, sir.
It seems to me that we have, on this committee, we have a lot of new members and who might not have never read it before or might not have digested the full impact of it. And if their comments could also be included in before we finalize all this stuff. I don't know how many general managers did they, the program directors, did they give their comments, and how many are, have any idea of it?
Well, yeah, let me speak briefly to that.
Okay.
I emailed the document to the program directors and the general managers after the PNB passed it on numerous occasions in November and December and again in January.
Mm-hmm.
I made it my personal business to call every program director and every general manager on several occasions. I was able to speak about the programming policy with Eva Georgia and Armando Godinho, and I had a brief discussion with Roy Campanella, who's no longer with us. I did not receive any written comments from any general manager or any program director. However, one other thing I would like to point out is that after the programming committee was convened last year, every time we had a committee meeting, and our committee met on the third Monday of every month, all of the GMs and program directors received notice. They got all of the documentation that any other member of the committee got, and we actually had a couple of program directors and general managers on our calls throughout the year. So the things that we were doing to develop a program policy were documentation and issues and that all of the program directors and general managers received, and they were invited to all of the meetings. And we'll continue the same policy this year. I would hope we would continue that. But the reality is that we received no specific written responses from anyone in management.
Well, that's amazing.
May I offer a suggestion?
Steve, sure.
It might be that these are busy people. Unless they're perhaps put on the spot, they will not find time to respond. If a letter from this committee was sent out to each program director, again with a copy of the policy, and saying that perhaps you have looked it, we have not received written comment from your particular station and from the general manager and program director, will you enclose a stamp self-addressed envelope and say that we will be happy to receive your comments within the next week. Thank you very much. They still may not send it, but it's a little harder to ignore. And you probably get more of a response than you would at the cost of a few postage stamps.
Maybe
I'm happy to. I mean, I think that's a good suggestion. I think we should do it. Is that something we need to vote on, or can we just go ahead and follow Steve's advice?
Would you verbalize it? Would you tell me one more time in a minute?
That we send another copy of this to each general manager and program director individually with their names on it, saying, "Dear so and so, in going through our records, we found that." You probably overlooked it, but you didn't send back your response to response and comments on the policy as voted by the PMB or wherever it was last year. We hope that you will do so in the next 2 days, 2 weeks, whatever it is, and we enclose a stamped self-addressed envelope for your response marked to my attention and see what happens. It's a tried and true fundraising technique.
Where can I access this document?
Pardon me?
Rob sent a copy of it to you, I think, today.
Is that Lisa?
Yes, Lisa in Houston.
Lisa, I didn't have an email address for you.
Okay.
But I'm if you give it, well, I will
I'll
call you.
I'll give it to you now, because I have one that's
no, don't do it on the call,
Lisa.
I'll call you immediately after we hang up, Lisa, because I have
okay.
your phone number.
Awesome.
And get it off to you, yeah.
Okay, that's great.
Rob, this is Bonnie.
Yes, Bonnie.
Wouldn't it be easier, since everybody, that's an awful lot of paper, wouldn't it be easier to just email this to all the program directors and the general managers with a nice note telling them that we would like to hear what they have to say? It just seems a little awkward to me for us to be making general managers and program directors mail stuff back with their comments. It seems pretty
you're right, it would be easier
to deal
with
the email.
Easier to ignore. The idea is that we want a response.
I mean, we could ask the ED to
quickly
get a response from GMs and TDs.
Sure.
And we could ask specific questions too. You know, do you think there might be any advantages to blankety blank? Or
you're right, a multiple choice might get a response quicker. You know, they only have to check off a number of 10 or 15 boxes, they'll probably send it right back.
I think we're kind of wading into a morass here. If Bonnie, if you'd like to send your suggestions about how we should do this, we'll try another approach. I think we've left no stone unturned, and we're willing to turn over more stones in another field. But I'm not sure which method is better than another at this point.
It doesn't really matter to me. I just thought that most of us deal so much with email right now, it just seems a little bit more expedient.
My experience is that email, that a lot of people don't read their email in the network, a lot of them. So but you know, we'll consider it. But I'm happy to come up with something, and I'll send it to the members of this committee to see if they have any suggestions on the text. One last recommendation.
Okay, may I ask, for the notes,
Teresa?
For the minutes, Brown moved to send a copy for feedback on the program policy to each GM and PD by mail, requesting response, enclosing a stamped self-addressed envelope.
Right. A personal letter from Rob or the secretary, maybe from Rob, with the envelope to the attention of Rob Robinson. I mean, really, it's a kind of friendly arm twisting, for a good purpose.
We're going to complete the results of the election, and as soon as that's done, I would anticipate that every member of this committee will get a draft of such a letter, and they can have input into the wording, so that we can try to get that out there. Is that okay with everyone?
I have a suggestion, Rob. I think that we should send it to the executive director rather than us dealing with all these, the staff and the management side of it. We just send it to a director, and he can distribute it to whoever he thinks appropriate people at every station and get the response to us. I think that would be probably a better way of doing it.
Maybe we should do both.
We should do both.
Yep.
Well,
yep.
The only thing is that, you
good
know.
Good points are.
Yeah, anyway. That's.
Well, I think we're doing everything we can to make it clear that we're trying to undertake this process cooperatively with management.
Yeah, Rob, the point is that unless we get some positive response to show that the management of the stations and the program directors have had input, it will not have as much credibility as we would like going forward. And I think it's a good document, and it needs that support.
I take your point. So I'd like to suggest that we try to do both. there's one last point, and then, you know, we've been on the call long enough, we need to get off. I got a call from several members of the KPFK local station board, which actually had a meeting with the general manager and the program director to discuss the programming policy. And one of the things that they urged me is that this group would consider recommending to the PNB that they consider adding a section from the implementation that dealt specifically with the business of program evaluation. Now, how many of the people on the call right now did not read the document at all? Do you mind telling me that?
I read it, but how thorough? I mean, you know.
Okay. I'd like to just read this section because all it does is it expands on how the process of program evaluation, which is already underway at KPFT in Houston, at KPFA in Berkeley, and at KPFK in Los Angeles. It may be underway at WBAI in New York, and I know that there's an LSB committee at WPFW that's been looking at evaluation. But let me just read the section to you and tell me if you want to discuss making a recommendation or if you would rather consider it subsequently. Hello?
Hello?
Did someone mute their phone?
No.
Oh, okay. The section 8.0, which is on page 13 of the policy document, reads as follows. Under the section called Roles and Responsibilities, it says, it is more important that all local stations have a procedure for evaluating their programming and circulating their findings and conclusions and recommendations than that the process be uniform. It is desirable that PDs, local station board program committees, and program councils, where they exist, cooperate in this process. Local stations' general managers are required by Corporation for Public Broadcasting funding guidelines to maintain annual program goals, station services and policies, and policy decisions that implement them, and to review with community advisory boards. We recommend Pacifica's budgets and regular reports by the general managers present these goals and the progress of their implementation. The second part of it reads under the item oversight, the programming committee shall review local stations' missions fulfillment assessments, program goals, station services, and policy implementation and program evaluation, as well as listener research reports annually. The programming committee, this committee, with the support of the network programming coordinator, which is an office referred to in the policy, shall dedicate its time during the fall PNB meeting to reports from local station PDs and GMs, affiliates and others on programming, while the budget is on the table. This committee shall collate these, prepare an assessment, and make recommendations to the PNB and the executive director annually at the January meeting. Their reports and recommendations that this body should pay particular attention to as follows: unmet areas of the mission, underserved communities and age groups, availability of programming resources and staffing, program quality, community recognition and response to local station initiatives and programming awards, stratification in the program schedule, the need for new voices, and demographic and listener trends. The committee may propose national standards for program evaluation insofar as this helps local stations establish fair and thorough evaluations and includes the best practices of the local station's program evaluation processes. Okay, so what KPFK was saying is that we would like the programming committee to recommend to the national board that this section of the implementation part be added into the policy. Is that something that you want to consider, or do you want to take more time to read it and think about it and comment at the next meeting?
More time sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay. I hear that everyone would like more time to think about this. So we're done with the agenda. The last thing that we...
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Teresa.
When I'm going to send a draft of the minutes to you...
Yes.
Do you want to attach what you just read, and when you send out the minutes, state It will be on the agenda for us to review this and discuss this at the next meeting. So it's attached.
Yeah, I will excerpt that portion from the document and stick it into the minutes. So even if people don't get a chance to go to their copy of the policy and read it, they'll see it in the minutes. Is that okay?
That'll be good.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, how do you want me to put that in the minutes? What's the title of what you just?
It was a suggestion from the KPFK local station board that we recommend further language to be added into the programming policy.
Yeah, and you said it's the local station board, right?
Yeah.
And not.
And this was regarding program evaluation?
Yes, only program evaluation.
Okay,
this recommendation was made by the KPFK local station board, by some listeners.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, thank you.
We're done with the formal... Yes?
Thank you, Rob.
Oh, wait a minute. We're done with the formal part of the meeting. I'd like to recommend that we continue with the schedule that we adopted of the meeting at 8:30 Eastern Time, 5:30 Western Time, 7:30 Central Time on the third Monday of each month. Is that time and day agreeable to everybody on this call?
Back to you on that.
In April, that'll be the day after Easter, just in case people are out of town. I don't know if people...
Okay.
I'll be hunting eggs, Easter eggs, you know.
You still on Monday?
Sure, man.
Steve,
hard to find, don't they hide them?
Mr. Chair, you're proposing that someone suggest the third Mondays for our regular meetings of this committee?
No, I'm suggesting that I'm recommending that we adopt that, and we'll put that in the minutes, and then we'll try to verify that with everybody else. Because I hear three or four people saying, I've got to check with my schedule before I can give you an answer.
Okay.
So it's simply been suggested, and the members will take it under advisement, and I'll have to follow up with them about that.
Okay.
Cool.
Good.
So are we saying that our next meeting will be the 17th or not?
I'm going to have to confirm that individually with the members.
All right.
We can suggest it, though, right? And then just
yeah, we have suggested it, but a number of people can't give us a firm answer, so I've got to follow up with people by phone and get back to you with email and other phone.
Right.
Well, listen, I'd like to thank everybody for being so patient and letting us have that discussion with Professor Lessig. I thought your questions were all very
interesting.
Yeah, I think your questions were good, and you know, what I like about the members of this committee is that you've enabled us to really push the dialogue about where the network is going to go from the perspective of programming, which is, after all, in many of our points of view, how we actually measure the mission, our fulfillment of the mission. So thanks so much. Have a good evening, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.